It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out there on the edge of the prairie. Big wind came in yesterday and brought in a little taste of November for us. Turned chilly and cold almost right away. And Jimmy Krepsbach, who was visiting from Texas, felt this chill, decided it was time he headed back down home. He called the 800 number, and he moved up his airline reservation to a couple weeks from now. He's been visiting friends and family up here, and like so many Minnesotans who moved away in search of warm weather, he has become deacclimated, you see, and so they're no longer able to tolerate extremes of heat and cold. Minnesotans, you and I, we're very flexible people. We can lead the lives of gypsies if we want to. We can live anywhere from the North Slope of Alaska down to the equator, any place really. We're completely free and independent. But there are all of these Minnesotans, you may have heard of them, who moved off to California in search of a beautiful climate, and they settled there on the California coast, and now they've become so deacclimated that they cannot tolerate any climate outside of this narrow strip. It's about 100 miles long, and it's about 5 miles wide. And it's from roughly San Luis Obispo down to Santa Barbara, and they live there in that tiny strip, and they never get outside it. They can come back to Minnesota for maybe 2 or 3 weeks in the month of May and maybe half of the month of September. But otherwise, they stay right there in that little narrow strip, and because their territory is so small, they've never been able to get a really good education or to find really good jobs. It's like those animals who disappear because their territory has been decimated. The passenger pigeon and the American bison and the dodo as well on the island of Mauritius just vanished because they were compressed into a tiny area. These Minnesotans live in this little strip there, and they live in mobile home parks, and they're tan and they're comfortable and they're illiterate, and they live on welfare because they can't leave this tiny strip of land. It's a sad thing. Anyway, Jimmy Krepsbach lives down in Texas, and he did really, really well in natural gas a few years back, and he earned a vast amount of money, and he was able to amass this terrific collection of Cadillac Eldorado convertibles circa 1959, 1960, big tail fins with the rocket in them. He has 516 in his collection, most of them white, but a lot of them red, and some blue, and he has them just south of Odessa, just not too far from the interstate. He had them parked outside for a couple of years, and in fact, he had them arranged to form the Stars and Stripes, blue and red and white stripes, and they were all parked out there. People took aerial photographs. There are postcards. You can take a look at this. Until something fell out of the sky and landed on one and demolished it, and it was a Nash Rambler, which had fallen out of a cargo plane. A car destroyed by another car falling out of the sky, and the sun was hard on the finish, and so he moved all of them indoors. He built this 350,000 square foot warehouse out there on the dry, dusty plains to keep them all in, 16 of which he had bought on eBay from the late beloved leader of the Republic of North Korea, Kim Il-sung, and So it's all there, these Cadillac Eldorados. He's a different person in Texas than he is in Minnesota. And we know that, but he accommodates us when he comes back. He leaves the big hat and the boots down there, and he just gets a rental car at the airport, and he drives up to Lake Wobegon, and he's very friendly, and he's good to his parents, Myrtle and Florian. And he goes down to Krebsbachchev, and he crawls in under the cars, and he changes oil and spark plugs, and he goes out fishing for walleyes, and he cleans his own fish. And to us, he's sweet Jimmy Krebsbach, this kid who grew up there in Lake Wobegon. We remember him because he used to carry a briefcase to first grade. And when he had a crush on a girl, he would give her a roll of pennies. People remember these things. And he's good to his parents, and he sends them money so they can take trips and fix up their house. He's a good person. The Krebsbach family had a picnic on Sunday. They had it on the beach down by the Moonlight Bay Supper Club. Myrtle Krebsbach said, "If you think I'm going to make supper for that whole crowd, you've got another think coming." Well, people were glad that she didn't want to, because her cooking has just gone to pot over the years. She used to be known for her fried chicken and her potato salad, and now she just drives down to the Piggly Wiggly and she buys big tubs of stuff and sets it out. She doesn't care. So everybody was there at the beach before they went in for dinner. And Jimmy Krebsbach was there on the beach, and Carl's wife, Margie, got up her nerve to ask him. She said, "I don't mean to be nosy, and you can tell me if it's none of my business, but that scar on your chest, did you have a heart operation or what?" "No," he said, that's where I stabbed myself with a butcher knife back in 1998. It was 14 years ago. She said, "Oh, was that before the natural gas wells hit?" "No," he said, no. "No, that was long after. No, Flora and I, we'd gone through hard times. We'd been through bankruptcy four times before then, and the kids were born, and we did okay. And then the money flowed in, and then that was when we got into trouble, and she left me. She took the kids, and she went out to California. She was upset about my drinking, and because I like to sit in the kitchen, and I like to shoot a .22 pistol at the refrigerator. I just like the ka-chunk sound that it made, and it didn't hurt anybody. But she got really upset with me, and she took the kids, and she left, and I felt so bad, and I got really drunk. And then she sent me a text and said that she had gone off with a cocktail pianist that she'd been in love with for several years, and she wished me well. And I got as drunk as I could and still stand upright, and I took the butcher knife and I plunged it into my chest. It was really sharp. I'd sharpened it well, so I didn't feel that much. And I lay down expecting to die, and then I didn't die. And I got in my car and I drove to the hospital. And they pulled the knife out of me and they bandaged it up. It just hadn't hit anything crucial. And they gave me a cup of Vicodin, and they sent me home. And not dying really changed my life. I quit drinking, and I added about 150 cars to my collection. I'd always been a little hesitant about buying more Eldorados, but Flora had told me that she would leave me if I bought any more, and now she had, so I did. It just made sense to me. "Well, my goodness," said Margie. That was Sunday night. They had gone to Mass at Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility that morning at Florian's insistence, and that was the morning that Father Wilmer had terrible allergies and was coughing and wheezing and hacking. And nonetheless, he stuck with it, and he read the gospel for that Sunday, which was the passage where Jesus tells his disciples that they must pick up their cross and follow him. What does our faith mean if we're not willing to die for it? And what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Father Wilmer was wheezing up there and coughing. He could barely speak because instead of Benadryl, he had taken a diuretic. And so he was wheezing and his head was full of snot, and he was going back from one foot to the other, and he had to pee so badly and was moving to people. I mean, that's a verse, what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul, that makes any room of Christians get very quiet all of a sudden. But here it was in front of them. Here you could see the humanity of the priest who was in pain but still stuck to his post. Then the choir came in and sang the anthem after the sermon, which was, the homily was just two paragraphs, really, his first and last paragraph, and the anthem came up, and he disappeared into the vestry and found relief. But it was moving to people that our humanity just sticks out all over us. And what shall it profit us if we gain the whole world? They went out to supper that night at the Moonlight Bay Supper Club, and Margie sat and she looked at Jimmy Krebsbach over there, who was getting ready to go back to Texas. He's famous in Texas, we know that, but he doesn't bring it with him. When he comes back, he's just himself, Jimmy. He's kind to his parents. He's like one of us. She looked at him. She knew that he's a right-wing Republican, and that's why we never talk about politics around him. We just don't want to ever get into that. He doesn't either. We just talk about fishing, and we talk about cars. There he is, a right-wing Republican, but he loved a woman so much that when she left him for a cocktail pianist, he ran a butcher knife into his chest. We truly don't know each other. We are ships in the night. One more reason to be as kind as we possibly can. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are bug-eyed.